Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 79 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Kayla Hall.
Our law enforcement is very keyed in on the drug at this time. We saw very little heroin in this state until just the last few years, so there's some increased awareness on the part of law enforcement.
Kentucky drug czar Van Ingram says deaths from heroin overdoses are rising in the Bluegrass.
Governor Beshear does not plan to add other items to a special legislative session due to start next month.
And Simon Kenton plans a visit to the Rowan County Public Library.
In sports, the Reds try to rebound against San Diego tonight after a heartbreaking loss Monday.
Bud Luke has the stocks.
Cloudy with showers and thunderstorms possible tonight. Lows in the 60s. The complete weather forecast is coming up, but first, this news.
A Scioto County grand jury has indicted a 39-year-old Portsmouth man on charges that he robbed the Gallia Street branch of West Banco. The story from MSPR's Arlo Barnett.
The Portsmouth Daily Times reports that Christopher D'Souza was indicted for aggravated robbery in connection with a July 6th incident at the bank. Police say employees tell them the culprit appeared to have a gun inside his hoodie during the robbery but did not display it. They arrested D'Souza several blocks from the bank and say some of the stolen cash was recovered. This is Arlo Barnett for Moorhead State Public Radio News.
A 45-year-old South Point, Ohio man has been sentenced to nearly 6 years in prison after pleading guilty to distributing oxycodone in the tri-state area. WSAZ reports that Vernon Browning was sentenced Monday in federal district court in Huntington. Browning admitted obtaining prescription painkiller pills from Atlanta and selling them in the automotive repair shop in which he worked in Huntington.
Drug overdose deaths in Kentucky declined in 2012 compared to the previous year, but the state's drug czar says deaths connected to the use of heroin skyrocketed. Van Ingram is director of Kentucky's Office of Drug Policy and Control. He says 1,004 people died in Kentucky from drug overdoses last year, 19 fewer than 2011. However, he says deaths from heroin jumped 550%. The lower price, says the former Maysville police chief, had a lot to do with that.
We have a long history of an opioid problem in this state, and heroin is an opioid. It's just a street version as opposed to a pharmaceutical version. Unfortunately, people who are addicted to opiates and are accustomed to IV drug use are going to be drawn towards heroin because it's cheap and it's available.
Ingram says deaths from heroin accounted for just 3% of total drug fatalities in 2011.
A helicopter pilot and a Kentucky state trooper are being treated for non-life-threatening injuries at a Huntington hospital following the crash of their chopper Monday near the Breathitt-McGoffin County line. The two were working as part of the KSP's cannabis eradication effort when the chopper came down near Sean Johnson's house. Johnson tells WYMT that he rushed to the scene and administered aid to the victims.
The co-pilot had severe burns to his neck and a fractured femur, and the pilot, he had severe burns and some cuts.
The National Transportation Safety Board is in Breathitt County to investigate the crash.
Kentucky child safety officials have testified that their main reason for redacting information and files of children who have been severely abused or neglected is to protect the privacy of families involved. Department of Community-Based Services Teresa James says that protecting the privacy of the families helps them to heal and rebuild. The Courier-Journal and the Lexington Herald-Leader report the testimony came Monday during a hearing in Frankfort over whether the Cabinet for Health and Family Services is following the correct procedure for redacting information in the files that a judge has ordered turned over to the newspapers.
Governor Beshear says it's unlikely he'll ask state lawmakers to deal with regulations on pipelines when they assemble in Frankfort next month for a special session. The governor says he called the special assembly to draw new maps for House and Senate districts and doesn't plan on adding anything else to the call.
The issues involved in this proposed pipeline, they're not moving fast enough that it will cause us a problem not to address them right now. We'll have plenty of time in January when the regular session starts to address any issues that come up.
We'll Williams and Boardwalk Pipeline Partners are proposing to build the Bluegrass Pipeline across Kentucky to carry natural gas liquids to the Gulf Coast. The company is holding an open house on its plan August 6th in Williamstown.
A federal agency plans to open up a state forest in eastern Ohio to shale gas drilling. The Columbus Dispatch reports that the U.S. Bureau of Land Management wants to open more than 4,500 acres of the Blue Rock State Forest in Muskegon County to hydraulic fracturing or fracking. Bids from oil and gas companies will be sought in a December 12th public sale that has environmental advocacy groups asking why neither federal nor state officials took any additional steps to inform the public. Robert Gilcash is a Bureau of Land Management spokesman. He says the agency followed rules for public notification and put the land up for auction only after the Ohio Department of Natural Resources officials consented. However, state officials say the decision was made without their input.
Kentucky House Majority Leader Rocky Adkins is confident the General Assembly next month will come up with a redistricting plan for House and Senate seats that can withstand a constitutional challenge. The Boyd County Democrat says that work is already underway.
That's our job. I think that we will achieve that job when we go in on August the 19th. There's a lot of work going on right now to try to get those maps put together, and I think that all of us that serve in the General Assembly understand our responsibility.
And Adkins says members will meet that responsibility. The General Assembly's initial plans for new House and Senate boundaries were declared unconstitutional earlier this year by the Kentucky Supreme Court.
Almost a month after announcing she would run for the U.S. Senate, Kentucky Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes officially kicks off her campaign this afternoon in her hometown of Lexington. The 34-year-old Democrat is seeking to unseat Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who will have served 30 years in the Senate when the election is held in November 2014. Grimes' campaign said that Governor Beshear will join her for the event this afternoon.
Kentucky Lieutenant Governor Jerry Abramson says he'll decide in 2 to 3 weeks whether to run for governor in 2015. The Democrat talked about the race with Insight Cable's Pure Politics. The field of potential candidates is growing, but Abramson says that won't be a factor in what he chooses to do.
You know, with my track record, the experience that I've had, I'd say the more the merrier. I'll make my decision not on who's running, but I'll make my decision on what I want to do in the next chapter of my life.
Abramson will not be participating in the Fancy Farm political picnic in Western Kentucky this weekend, but he says no one should read too much into that.
Sheldon Clark High School in Martin County may have to be closed before the school year begins because of safety concerns. School officials say cracks in the walls and floors of the building have gotten worse because of blasting from nearby road construction. The Martin County School Board authorized an engineering report on the school. Member Gary Ball talked about the issue with WYMT.
If you read the report, it said that the school could not lack the structural integrity, that if you had a significant seismic wind or blast event, the school could possibly collapse.
The school board has not yet decided what to do, but a special meeting is scheduled for Thursday evening. The first day of school is August 7th.
Center College has received its largest endowment ever and one of the largest gifts to a liberal arts college in the nation. As Kentucky Public Radio's Devin Katayama reports, the $250 million donation will be used to set up a program that offers full-ride scholarships.
The money is coming from the A. Eugene Brockman Charitable Trust, whose son attended Center College. Vice President of College Relations Richard Trollinger says it's not the first time the trust has donated to Center, but it's definitely the largest.
We're just deeply honored that the trust has such confidence in the work that we do with the young men and women who pursue their educational goals here.
Beginning fall 2014, 40 Brockman scholars will be enrolled in Center College each year. It'll be a competitive application process aimed at tomorrow's leaders who are focusing in natural and computer sciences, math, and economics. Drollinger says around 60% of the student body is enrolled in one of these programs. Further, he says the size of the gift will allow the college to continue the scholarship program in perpetuity. For Kentucky Public Radio, I'm Devin Katayama.
Morehead State University has received a grant from the National Institute of Health for a 3-year study of the language process. Leading the research will be Dr. Katie Carlson, Associate Professor of English at MSU. She says the project will explore how emphasizing certain words contributes to the understanding of a sentence. She says it's the sort of work that can benefit doctors treating patients who've lost or have impaired language abilities.
The prosody, this tune and rhythm part of speech, can actually be affected by certain types of brain injuries or brain damage. And if we don't understand how unimpaired people use this part of speech, then we don't know what it is that people with some sort of brain damage or speech problem, what they're missing, and we don't know how to treat them.
Carlson says the $350,000 grant will fund one postdoctoral and several undergraduate researchers.
Student housing at Eastern Kentucky University is entering a new era. Instead of state-funded dormitories, some EKU students will move into a privately developed housing complex adjacent to campus. The multi-floored grand campus at York Place sleeps 256 students. Property manager Taylor Armstead says the rooms are fully furnished.
They don't have to worry about buying thrift store furniture or begging parents for hand-me-downs or anything like that. This one in particular is brand new, so it's all like top-of-the-line, state-of-the-art stuff, and everything's included. So all of their water, electric, cable, and internet are all packaged into one price, and that's all they have to worry about once a month.
Monthly rent for a four-bedroom, four-bathroom apartment unit begins at $520. Armstead admits it might be a little chaotic as students begin moving in Thursday. The first day of class at Eastern isn't until August 19th. The complex is linked to the main campus with a new pedestrian walkway over Lancaster Avenue.
And finally this afternoon, Simon Kenton explored much of Kentucky during the frontier era, and Thursday night he'll add the Rowan County Public Library to his list of travels. The Virginia native who served as a scout on the famous 1778 expedition of George Rogers Clark will discuss his exploits during a 6 o'clock program in the community room. Kenton is being portrayed by Mel Hankla in a special living history program presented by the Rowan County Historical Society and Kentucky Chautauqua. Gary Lewis is president of the Historical Society.
Simon Kenton was one of the early pioneers in the settlement of Kentucky, and he's really a legend as much as Daniel Boone. They traveled together, actually, and Simon Kenton had a lot to do with the Indian relations, you know, and the early settlement and the Revolutionary War. One of our icons of historical figures.
Lewis says Mel Hankla is also a flintlock gunsmith who has made several traditional long rifles like those used by Simon Kenton.
Taking a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the counties of Fleming, Montgomery, and Morgan. Tonight, cloudy, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the lower 60s. Wednesday, cloudy, 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the upper 70s. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the mid 60s. Thursday, partly cloudy, highs in the lower 80s. Currently in Ashland, it is 81 degrees, Flemingsburg, 79 degrees, 77 degrees in Winchester, 80 degrees in Lexington and Inez, and 82 degrees in Morehead.
It is 4:44. You are listening to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. On our feature segment this afternoon, we have commentary from Morehead State University professor Rick Carrick. He weighs in on the George Zimmerman verdict.
One of the most important outcomes of the not guilty verdict in the case of George Zimmerman's killing of Trayvon Martin has been a renewed public debate about racial stereotyping. President Obama, Attorney General Eric Holder, and other African-American office holders and writers have been giving heartfelt testimonials about stereotyping. Whether it's being followed in stores, stopped and frisked by police with no probable cause, or arrested while trying to get into their own houses, African-Americans have a deep-felt sense of injustice about being assumed to be violent criminals because they're black. To the contrary, white conservatives like Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution argue that whites should assume that all African-American males who are unknown to them are criminals until they are proven otherwise. For Hanson, racial stereotyping is right and reasonable because blacks have been empirically demonstrated to commit a disproportionate amount of violent crime. When I look at this debate, I find myself in awe of the black writers I read and the black people I know. For African-American guys and their loved ones, the murder of Trayvon Martin was a pointed reminder that even something as seemingly routine as walking down the street can blow up into a life-and-death situation. One of my black colleagues needs no such reminder because he feels obligated to put his empty hands out of the car window anytime he's stopped by the police as a way to prevent traffic stops from blowing up into situations where he could get shot. In thinking about this situation, MSNBC host Melissa Harris Perry goes back to the writing of W.E.B. Du Bois at the height of the segregation period and imagines herself being asked, quote, "How does it feel to be a problem? To have your very body and the bodies of your children assumed to be criminal, violent, malignant." What's awe-striking about this is the patience and moral fortitude with which African Americans endure this kind of humiliating treatment and keep making their case for being recognized as full human beings, embraced as fellow citizens, friends, and colleagues, and treated with equal justice by the institutions of American society. Going back to the 18th century, African-American writers have shown a singular ability to transcend anger and bitterness to articulate an ethic of mutual understanding, and the same has been true with the black response to the George Zimmerman verdict. Conservatives are much less admirable. Blacks might commit a higher proportion of the violent crime, but the chances of any black guy you encounter being a violent criminal have always been infinitesimally small. Yet, conservatives like Victor Davis Hanson and Pat Buchanan insist that white people treat all black males as criminal until they are proven innocent for the time being. Conservatives have made a kind of existential judgment that black people can't be, quote, one of us, and therefore hold black people under constant suspicion as strangers. By maintaining this kind of belligerent prejudice, however, conservatives go against the American tradition of treating all men and women as created equal, distance themselves from the increasing importance which the civil rights movement and its legacy plays in American political identity, and defy the Christian ethic of loving and honoring those who seem most foreign to you. Perhaps it's time for conservatives to wonder whether they are the ones who are becoming strangers to American society and its traditions, and reconsider the morality of their position. Racial stereotyping goes against everything that's good in American political, moral, and religious traditions and should be condemned by all elements of American society.
Dr. Rick Carrick is a professor of international and interdisciplinary studies at Morehead State University. 4:48, All Things Considered, from NPR at 5 o'clock and MyCast Sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from the Rowan County Farmers Market, open at 11 a.m. Wednesdays and Saturdays and located near the entrance to the Morehead City Park. The Rowan County Farmers Market features homegrown fruits and vegetables and assorted canned and baked goods. Farmers Market Nutrition Program WIC and senior checks are accepted. For additional information, the phone number is 784-5457. Kentucky Proud. Nothing else is close.
The Reds meet the Padres for round two. Good afternoon. Public Radio Sports Time is 4:49. I'm Mike Williams reporting. The Cincinnati Reds will meet the San Diego Padres once again this evening in California. The Big Red Machine is looking to right the ship after losing to walk-off home runs their last two nights on the diamond. Head coach Dusty Baker says it's tough, but his ball club just simply has to carry on.
Sometimes you got to fight through these bad periods. You know, periods sometimes when things don't go right. But you got to keep battling and keep battling, and you know, things will turn around for us. It's just, especially two nights, it's walk-off moments. That's two nights in a row. I think we got them all out of our system.
Tonight's pitching matchup will feature an interesting storyline where hard-throwing right-hander Matt Latos, who is a former Padre, will meet a former Red in Edison Volquez. Tonight's first pitch is scheduled from Petco Park at 10:10 Eastern Time. In other baseball action this afternoon, currently the Padres are over the Cardinals, 1-0 in the second inning. As camp advances on this week for the Cincinnati Bengals, individual players look to bond together as one. That's according to rookie running back Giovanni Bernard. He says the combination of him and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis in the backfield can be effective and lighten the workload for both of them.
We can just complement each other. He's a big bruiser. I mean, he's still a guy that can catch the ball at the backfield, a guy that can get outside as well. Just added my little speed and my shiftiness or whatever kind of helps him out a little bit more so he doesn't take so much pounding on his body. But at the end of the day, he is a leader in our running back group, and I have to follow his footsteps.
Green Ellis and Bernard are expected to do most of the heavy lifting in the backfield for Cincinnati this season. The Bengals' first preseason game is August 8th against the Atlanta Falcons in Georgia. Speaking of the Bengals, there's no question who's in the early stars of the filming for the Cincinnati Bengals' latest appearance on Hard Knocks. Whenever the camera crews shoot footage of people catching the ball, rookie tight end Tyler Eifert is in the frame often. The 21st overall pick of Notre Dame was expected to add another dimension to the Bengals' run-of-the-mill passing game. With all-pro receiver A.J. Green sidelined by a knee injury, Eifert has been getting all the balls throughout practice, and many others gaining more experience. Penn State's former president told investigators that he knew better than to jump to conclusions that Jerry Sandusky's horsing around in a university shower, that is, naked with a boy, could have been sexual in nature. Graham Spanier made the comment during the April 2011 grand jury testimony that was read aloud for the first time in a Harrisburg courtroom earlier today. The Columbus Police Department says it has closed the case against Ohio State running back and leading scorer Carlos Hyde because the alleged female assault victim did not wish to pursue charges. Hyde had been suspended from all team activities in the wake of the indictment, which occurred July the 20th at a downtown bar. Ohio State did not immediately offer comment on whether he will be reinstated to the team. Also, authorities say an 18-year-old was the driver in a single car crash that killed Texas A&M freshman football player Polu Manuku-Anu and a friend who is joining the Utah football team this fall. New Mexico State Police spokesman, say Emmanuel Gutierrez Jr., as well, crashed in the SUV he was driving earlier Monday. When he overcorrected the vehicle, it rolled several times near the town of Cuba in northern New Mexico. The Moorhead State volleyball program has a new face on its coaching staff. Marcy West has joined the Eagles head coach Jamie Gordon's staff as a volunteer assistant for the upcoming season. Gordon says West, who is a former member of Team USA Volleyball, has a lot to bring to the table for his Eagle program.
Couldn't be more excited about Marcy joining our program. Has an amazing amount of experience, both playing and coaching. She's a tremendous individual. We're just really looking forward to the new perspective that she can bring to the court for our players.
Along with being on Team USA, West was a finalist for the Gatorade National High School Player of the Year and was named Florida Miss Volleyball, rather, in 2002. She spent the 2012-13 year as an assistant coach and consultant at NCAA Division II member Texas A&M Commerce. The Rowan County boys soccer team is gearing up for its season opener in the coming weeks, and head coach Max Hammond is excited about getting his first season at the helm underway. He says Rowan has a tradition and proud rich program and hopes to build on that.
Can't wait for it. I've been looking forward to it since I took the job and seeing what we can do over here with the talent and the soccer community over here. It's always really strong, so we're hoping to have a lot of good kids come out and good soccer knowledge out of all the kids, and that's what I've seen so far out of them.
The Vikings will be looking to improve on their impressive 14-6 record last year. They will open up with a 2013 matchup at Pendleton County, and that will be on August 20th. Longtime Hendrick Motorsports executive Doug Ducart has been promoted to the newly created position of executive vice president and general manager. Ducart will report to team owner Rick Hendrick and company president Marshall Carlson. And finally this afternoon, a pair of American swimmers hit gold today at the World Championships in Barcelona, Spain. Missy Franklin, the winner of four gold medals at the 2012 Olympics, won her second gold of the championships in Spain. So did
Katie Ledecky, who smashed rather the world record in the 1500 freestyle for her second gold medal after taking first in the 400 meter freestyle as well. That's a check of sports this afternoon. Have a great evening. I'm Mike Williams reporting.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Season tickets for Morehead State football, soccer, and volleyball are now on sale, as well as single game tickets for football. Single event tickets for soccer and volleyball will be available on game days. More information on single game or season tickets is available from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the National Offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. stocks barely moved as investors cautiously awaited the latest from the Federal Reserve in Friday's monthly jobs report. The Dow, S&P 500, and NASDAQ all very much on a flat line today, even as a lot of news began to unfold this week. And, of course, today in economic news, you had the Case-Shiller home price report, and it showed a jump of 12.2% in May, marking the biggest year-over-year gain since 2006, which was, of course, near the peak of the housing bubble. On the flip side, a report showed consumer confidence fell more than expected in July. And, of course, in addition to the Fed meeting tomorrow, you have the very big jobs report this Friday. And, of course, last month's report showed a marked improvement in the labor market, and investors are hoping to see that momentum continue. Economists surveyed expect 180,000 jobs were added in the month of July. And at the 4 o'clock close today, as mentioned, not much action, with the Dow dropping 1.38 at 15,520.59. The S&P 500 was up 0.63 at 1685.96, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 17.33. However, this was really keyed by strength in just certain tech stocks, as the NASDAQ finished at 3616.47. New York Stock Exchange breadth was 15 to 14 positive. Gold was down 0.25%, while oil was down 1.3%. And as mentioned in the tech sector, some standouts, and this would include Facebook, as Facebook shares came within a very close distance of their IPO price at 38 after the social network debuted Mobile Games Publishing, which is a program aimed at helping small to mid-sized game developers, and Facebook stock closed at $37.61. Other tech shares continue to rise on the heels of last week's strong earnings report, including Electronic Arts as well as Apple. And earnings continue to give investors a lot to chew on today. Herbalife, the controversial nutritional supplement maker that's been targeted by hedge fund manager Bill Ackman, reported better-than-expected earnings and raised its guidance, while Goodyear Tire & Rubber blew past analyst estimates, sending its shares up more than 8%. Shares of Pitney Bowes surged on news that Apollo Global Management will acquire its management services business for about $400 million in cash, and Pitney Bowes, which also reported better-than-expected earnings, was among the biggest gainers today on the S&P 500. Dow component Pfizer reported a drop in earnings, but nevertheless beat analyst forecasts by a penny a share. And shares of BP, a big loser after the company's quarterly results missed market expectations. BP reported a drop in earnings due in part to lower oil prices and higher taxes, and BP is also expecting to pay more in U.S. settlements related to the massive Gulf of Mexico oil spill in 2010. Turning now to individual stocks, it was Ashland Incorporated up 62 cents at 86.62, CSX up 6 cents at 24.71, AEP down 15 cents at 46.55, AK Steel down 4 cents at 3.48, Marathon Petroleum up 78 cents at 73.01, and Kroger was down 25 cents to finish at 39.60. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Support for MSPR comes from the MSU East Kentucky Small Business Development Center. Through a grant from the University of Kentucky Small Business Development Center, an export initiative assists manufacturers, wholesalers, and service providers to export products and services beyond the Appalachian Kentucky region. Based at the Small Business Development Center in Paintsville, the export initiative seeks to market Kentucky to the world. More information at 606-788-7272, online at moreheadstate.edu/sbdc.
Taking a look at your weather forecast tonight, cloudy, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the lower 60s.
And that's it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Mike Williams, Chase Johnson, Joshua Grandison, Sam Steyer, Caleb Noe, Asa Hosada, and Arlo Barnett. From Kentucky Public Radio, Devin Katayama. And our commentator this afternoon was MSU Professor Rick Carrick. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, and translator W202BHINES. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Kayla Hall and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Morehead State Public Radio News. ATC is next. It's 5 o'clock.